The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
Getting you closer to rugby with Irish Independent Park. Epic stories start here.
Good evening, folks. Hope you're all well on this Saturday evening. Pack show coming your way over the next hour as we discuss a thrilling win for Munster at Thomond Park and farewell to Paul O'Connell.
I said before, summer would be the time for fully making all those decisions, but yeah, it's probably the last time I play for Munster here anyway.
Probably, eh? We'll be discussing that a little bit more later on. Also tonight, reaction from Cork City's draw with Shamrock Rovers.
The second v third, and you know, they go home with a point, and we're probably disappointed, but overall, I suppose it was an even match, you know.
And two Cork legends, Tomás Mulcahy and Larry Tompkins, relived 1990 and the Rebels' double success.
When the seven Larry met on the Monday night back in Patrick Street, like with the two cups, you know, and we put the two cups out to the crowd, it was just a special moment, you know, and one that you'll always remember. It's not all about that, you know.
All that and much more on the Big Red Bench. How you doing, folks? Rory and Lisa here with you until 7 o'clock. A packed hour coming your way on the bench. We are going to start with that Munster game. We'll be talking to Dave Corkery very, very shortly. But first, Lisa's going to get us up to date on everything that happened today.
Yeah, Rory, a 21-18 victory for Munster over the Ospreys in their Pro 12 semi-final at Thomond Park. Ospreys had a late try ruled out due to a knock-on, so plenty of drama there. Munster tries in the match came from Simon Zebo and Dennis Hurley either side of the break, while Paddy Butler added the third. Rhys Webb and Jeff Hastler got the tries for Ospreys. In golf, Shane Lowry has finished on 8 under par, 6 off the leader Francesco Molinari at the BMW PGA Championship. In Gaelic Games, we have 3 matches in the Senior Hurling Club Championship as round 1 continues this evening. Douglas and St Finbar's is just getting underway at Porcurin in the first of a doubleheader there. The second match sees Glen Rovers go up against Ballymartle from 7:45, while Carrick Toohill and Erin's Own go head-to-head in Lisgould from 7 this evening. Clare host Limerick tonight in the opening game of this year's Munster Senior Football Championship. Cork await the winners in the semi-finals. The match in Ennis this evening throws in at 7 p.m. In boxing, Gary Spike O'Sullivan takes on Melvin Betancourt for the vacant NABA middleweight title tonight, due to get underway at around 8:30 Irish time. In football, there's one match in the League of Ireland Premier Division this evening as Longford Town take on Limerick at 7:30. In Scotland, Rangers will play Motherwell in a promotion decider after defeating Hibs in their playoff semi-final. In cricket, Cork County are hosting YMCA Dublin at the Mar Dyke. YMCA posted a total of 181 from their 50 overs, while a short time ago Cork County were 101 for 2 after 22 overs. In news of Formula 1, Lewis Hamilton will start tomorrow's Monaco Grand Prix from pole ahead of Nico Rosberg and Sebastian Vettel. And finally in racing, the Aidan O'Brien trained Glen Eagles has won today's Irish 2000 Guineas at the Curragh to complete a Guineas double.
Thank you very much indeed, Lisa. We are going to start the show with rugby and of course that fantastic win by Munster has all on the edge of our seats, and I'd imagine quite a few fingernails have been chewed right down to the nubs today after that game. But at Munster into the Pro 12 final, this is the reaction of head coach Anthony Foley.
Touch and go at times, isn't it? You know, you work your way into the game. I thought the boys played really well for long periods, get to 21-8 up, not really kicking particularly well at goal, leaving opportunities behind, and then we gift them 12 points, and from there we end up, you know, fighting for our lives, fighting for another week in the season. And you know, that would be a small bit of disappointment in that, but the character that the player showed, you know, the way they played the game, the work rate, you know, keep turning up for one another. I think freaking fellas in the backfield throwing their bodies under bodies, you know, to just chop fellas who had beaten them for feet, you know, it was an incredible effort. You know, you had two very good sides out there playing a good brand of rugby, nice and physical, ability to move to width, you know, challenging all aspects of the game. And you know, for it to go to the wire like that probably sums up this year's competition in terms of, you know, where everybody finished in the league and, you know, how tight it is. Even when you look at last night's game, you know, it's a tight competition, a lot of good teams and a lot of, you know, it's a good spectacle.
The one thing that we were questioning was all our players stood back when the ball was knocked on, so if they had played another phase, it would have been quite interesting. You'd like to think you'd, you, you, you get a TMO decision, you know, at some stage. So look, it was clear. It was clear that their player actually knocked it out of Webb's hand. So look, we move on, you know. But it was excellent pace out of the prop to come on. You know, he showed a clean pair of heels there. You know, so look, it's we got away with one. You know we need to be a small bit better at certain aspects of the game next week, and you know, I think we're capable of it. But it's about managing a situation now. You know, we kick our goals. We're not having this conversation. You know, I think we're 2 from 8. I think that's what we were in the game, and you know, that's disappointing. You know, disappointing handing them scores, but we still had Dennis Hurley on the pitch leading the side. We still had Paul O'Connell leading the side as well, and from the pack. You know, so we had a lot of quality out there, with a lot of physical leaders out there in Andrew Smith and CJ Stander, and you know, Dave Kilcoyne was physically going at him. Paddy Butler was physically going at him. You know, so we had a lot of physical leaders, and you're the intellectual leaders out there as well, plotting the course. So you know, we're happy enough. It's just disappointing to lose quality individuals that Connor and Peter are and Zeeves are to us out there at certain times. But you know, you deal with that, and we've dealt with that all year.
What can you tell us about Connor's injury?
It looked to me a late tackle. I don't think there was anything malicious in it, but it's the way Dan Lydiot tackles. Connor had fixed him and given it and kind of relaxed, and he got chopped in just under the knee on the shin bone, so kind of jarred his knee. So we need to, it's been investigated for an MCL, so look, we're just talking to the lad. He feels he's had one or two of these injuries before, like most players. He doesn't feel the sores, the ones he's had previously. So we're hopeful that, you know, we might get good news on him during the week. Peter, after half time, he's a hip flexor, which was troubling him before the Dragons game, tightened up. So we gave him a few minutes into the second half, and you know, he wasn't loosening out, so we just felt it prudent to take him off and make sure we didn't get any more damage on that. And Zeebs obviously took a heavy knock on a catch. You know, I know at the time where everybody was shouting for the TMO, but it looked okay to me.
And
Ferguson,
was that Paul Collins' last game out there? I think he spoke to Sky Sports after the match, said it might be his last game in Tone Park.
Yeah. Look, it's obviously a situation that you know, maybe he's pulling the pendant after the World Cup. We don't know. But if that's the case, that would be his last game for Munster and Tone Park.
Has he conveyed a message to you?
No, Paul's a big boy. He can talk his own.
He's not really giving much away, is he?
No, he's absolutely leaving that responsibility to Paul O'Connell, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, that's Anthony Foley there speaking after today's win, and of course, Paul O'Connell saying after the game that it was probably his last game in Thomond Park.
I've said before, summer would be the time for fully making all those decisions, but yeah, it's probably the last time I play for Munster here anyway.
So yeah, he sounds like that's it for him. Interesting. We'll let us know what you think on that. You can tweet us at Big Red Bench. You can text us 0868104106. Now, to discuss the game in a bit more detail, we're joined on the line by former Munster and Ireland forward David Corkery. And David, I suppose to use a particularly Cork word to describe this, Munster were haunted today, weren't they?
They were indeed. And look, you know, it is what it is. It was, you know, it was a fantastic game. It was cup rugby probably at its best. And it came down to the last minute, probably the last play of the game. It was fantastic to watch. You know, did they deserve it? You know, questions will be asked, and many people will differ on that answer. But they did it. You know, it's in history books now, and they can look forward to next week.
All right, let's talk through it from start to finish. You know, it was unbelievable. But the tries either side of half time, Munster looked in a great position, and then what happened?
Yeah, that was it. I mean, like they're the kind of the championship minutes. They're vital minutes in every cup game. You know, to score just before half time and again just after. You know, you would have thought that would have been enough for us to enjoy the last 20 minutes of the game in comfort. But again, you know, this comes back to big players and pressure plays. And you know, unfortunately, Ian Keatley, you know, only kicked 2 from 7 shots at goal, and you can't return those stats and expect to win games. Now look, Munster won the game in the end, and they did it quite fortunately, but you know, I would look at this as a warning shot across the bow for Munster, is that they have to produce an out half that can give us better stats than Ian Keatley is producing at the moment. It's just not good enough. You know, we're never going to be able to match it with the big boys in Europe. as long as Keith Lee is there. And look, there's no disrespect to the chap, he's a great player, but he's not quite at the level where Munster need to have an out half at the moment.
What happened to him today, Dave? Was the pressure? I mean, like the Sky Sports commentators are comparing to a golfer with the yips today. So, what do you think it was?
Yeah, no, like I don't think it is pressure. I mean, Ian Keighley has played over 100 games now for Munster, so he's well used to the pressure at this stage. You know, he's just not of that caliber. I mean, he's fantastic at times, he's not great at other times, and he's very, very poor. Today, he was quite poor. Not only from he's kicking from the ground, but also out of hand. He kicked a few dead, he kicked a few straight into touch, and you can't do it. You can't afford to do it, especially against a team like the Ospreys. I mean, that game should have been over 30 minutes before the end. If you calculate the amount of points, I think it was about 12, 13 points that went missing. And you can't do it. You know, if that had been any other team, you know, like that game, as I say, would have been a foregone conclusion. But the Ospreys kept in, Munster kept on giving them opportunities. They couldn't get two scores ahead. And as long as any team has that opportunity to come back at you, they'll take it. And the Ospreys, you know, they were a fantastic side. They, you know, the game in general was brilliant. It was played in almost a sevens type of style, and it was superb to watch.
And obviously, Munster coming or Ospreys coming back into this as well. It is worth noting, like Conor Murray going off injured, yeah. Peter O'Mahony, and then Simon Zeebo as well. They were big losses.
They're huge losses, and I mean, like you've got to look at it really in the context for next week now. My biggest fear would probably be Conor Murray. It's like he damaged the medial ligaments, and that could take anything from 5 to 6 weeks. And with the World Cup coming up, you would think that Joe Smith will come in here now and will be 100% sure that players like Conor Murray are going to be in 100% capacity when the World Cup comes around. So there's going to be no risks taken there, even though it is a final. But again, you know, Ireland will have the final say on as to players' availability for that. So yeah, it's going to be. And like, you also have to look at the ferocity of that game, and as I said, the style in which it was played. I mean, the opening 10 minutes of the game, I've never seen anything like this. I think Munster must have thought the Ospreys had 20 players on the field. They just came after wave after wave after wave, and you know, they did really, really well to repel them. But they just the ferocity and the weather allowed that to happen as well. So they're going to be some very, very tired and sore boys there.
Certainly will, yeah. Grueling 80 minutes of rugby. CJ Stander, man of the match, a fantastic performance from him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's the top ball carrier in the competition. You know what? Like, what impresses me about him is just his enthusiasm. He's always looking to get on the ball. He's always, you know, looking to be, you know, it's kind of a head down scenario, confrontation, typical South African type of attitude towards the game. And his power is immense. And you know, he's made a huge impact with Munster this year and has deserved all the accolades he gets.
Indeed, absolutely. And now, as you've mentioned already, looking forward to next week and the final. It's a very short turnaround and those injuries you've mentioned. But I mean, how are Munster going into this final now?
They'll go into it with a bit of confidence, but they'll also, you know, they have to look at it with a bit of caution as well. I mean, there's a big call to be made in 10. Like, you have JJ Hanrahan sitting on the bench. I know he's heading off to Northampton next year, but you know, it's a huge call. And looking at the way Ian Keighley can play and has played today, you know, I know what I would be doing. You know, playing in finals, it's all about taking risks. You know, it's a once-off shot. There's no next week. It's all about producing the goods on the day, and you have to take risks. And for me, I just don't have the confidence in Keighley at the moment.
Do you think Anthony Foley would do that? Because he hasn't, like, since the news of Hanrahan's move came, he seems to have been completely benched.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Anthony Foley has to look beyond next week as well. But, you know, in saying that, Munster haven't won a trophy in 4 years now. And what I was amazed at today, even before the game even kicked off, was the amount of empty seats in Tobin Park. And this was also the possibility of Paul O'Connor's last game, so you would have thought that place would have been jam-packed. So you have to ask the question, are the supporters, you know, the faithful supporters, starting to ask questions? And, they're demanding a bit of silverware this year. Hopefully that will be put to bed next week against Glasgow. But again, you know, that's going to be a huge game as well. So confidence is going to be one thing. And I think at the moment, Glasgow going into that game, the way they finished off the game last night, against Ulster, they, you know, momentum is certainly with them.
How would you assess that Glasgow team?
Very good. I mean, they finished the league top of the league, so if the league was a league in the true sense of the word, they would have won it. They finished top, Munster was second. But they're very dangerous. And what they have is they have a huge momentum going into this game. Like they're unbeaten, you know, I think it's 8 or 9 times in a row now this year, or sorry, towards the end of the season. So they have massive confidence. And as I say, the way they finished off Ulster, you know, a very good Ulster performance last night, will give them a lot of momentum going into the game. And Munster are going to be sore. They have a day less to recover, which, you know, it may not sound much, but in rugby terms and in the way that game was played today, it means a lot. Another 24 hours rest. So Munster are going to have to box really clever this week. They're going to have to look at the way they train. It's going to have to be very light. It's going to have to be very structured. It's a fantastic final. I'm just going mad it wasn't an Ulster-Munster final. It would have been great for Irish rugby to finish off the season like that. But it is what it is. You know, Munster have got there. They've got there, you know, you could say by default, really. They played really, really well in terms of defence, but you know, did they deserve it? As I said at the start, you know, questions will be answered about that, or asked about that one. But it's going to be a great game, and you know, it's going to be a fitting send off.
Yeah, Dave, he has said there, you know, that it's probably his last game at Thomond Park. But you could see the full-time whistle, his teammates, the guard of honour they gave him, and the scenes that we had at the full-time whistle as regards Paul.
Yeah, you would have thought that if it was his last game, it would have been said probably in the dressing room beforehand. Nobody is privileged to getting inside that dressing room, only the players and the coaches. So I think that will come out really over the next couple of days. Whatever Paul decides to do, whether it's head across to France or retire, he owes the game nothing at this stage. And he's done, you know, he's given the game a huge service in this country. If he goes to France and makes a bit of extra money out of it, so be it, he deserves it. But Paul has got to do what's best for him and his family now at this stage. And as I said, he owes Munster and Irish rugby absolutely nothing.
And if you were a betting man, what would you bet on Paul O'Connell doing next season?
If I was a betting man, I would bet on him heading across to France for a year. I just think the money on offer over there is huge. I mean, he could earn anything up to 700 to 750,000 for a year.
Whoa.
Over there. And that's the type of money that's on offer in Toulon and Toulouse and these places. Like, Toulouse's budget is 43 million per year. You know, how these, like, you can see why these French teams now are just dominating European rugby at the moment. It comes down to money, and they say you can't buy success. Well, you know, I can tell you money does buy success,
and
especially in European rugby. And, you know, I don't know where it's going. I don't know where European rugby is going at the moment with the French clubs, whether it's right or wrong, I just don't know. But, you know, going back to Munster, you know, they're going to have to look at their squad. They're going to have to look at key players and key positions if they're going to compete at that level again.
Indeed. Well, it's a huge week ahead anyway. And for now, we look forward to that final. Dave, thank you very much for your analysis this evening.
My pleasure.
That's David Corkery there discussing Munster's win and Paul O'Connell's likely exit to Toulon. 750 grand. That's what we had to throw at you to get you to join the Big Red Bench.
Yeah, something around that, I think, give or take a couple of euro. Yeah, and when you hear that, you can totally understand why Paul O'Connell would go to France.
That's a no-brainer, but it sounds good.
I definitely think he should go. It's phenomenal figures, and compared to Munster, like, they have double the budget in France, like a club like Munster would have, so it's unbelievable. And from a personal point of view, I think at some stage I did hear alright that Brian O'Driscoll was, you know, maybe disappointed he didn't go and do something similar, so maybe that's where Paul is kind of going to look around him and see what others did and take from it, you know.
And as David just said, there is his family to think about, and that's a lot of money as well.
Like, it is,
you know,
indeed.
So it's set up quite nicely.
And it's experience, and it's just the life.
And it's getting away from the Cork and Limerick weather. Like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which would be nice.
It would, all right, yeah. Whatever about down here in Cork, the Limerick weather even worse. So, yeah, no, I think we're still not going to find out Anthony for a long time, but he did give away quite a bit today.
All right, we are going to talk football. Cork City playing out a scoreless draw against Shamrock Rovers last night, which I thought was an absolutely terrible game of football. Lisa has a slightly different opinion. We'll discuss that a little bit later on. But first, we're going to hear from our City boss, John Caulfield, speaking after the scoreless draw at the Cross.
That was a helter-skelter game. It was, I'll have to look back in it. And but I suppose, look, there was only one chance in the whole game. And I suppose that was Gary's header off the crossbar. And, you know, other than that, there was the intensity and the pressure was savage out there, and it was very hard to get it down and knock it around. And you know, I suppose we anticipated that before the game, but we just didn't probably do enough to create enough chances. And you know, so I suppose, look at the second v third, and you know, they go home with a point, and we're probably disappointed. But overall, I suppose it was an even match, you know.
I think you should have had a penalty there with Marcus Sullivan sandwiched second half.
I'd have to see it again, to be honest. It looked that way, but to be fair,
judging on your own reaction at the time.
Yeah, at the time maybe, but to be fair, Paul was close to the action, and he's a very good referee, and you know he doesn't be making rash decisions unless he's absolutely sure. So look, he was close to the action. So to be fair, I'd be only picking the straws now if I said that, you know. You know, it was probably the two set pieces that probably we caused them the trouble, and from open play we found it difficult, and you know, up top it was difficult. Billy found it difficult. She found it difficult behind him, and there was you know, it was really, I suppose, controlled between Colin Healy and probably Keith Fahey. To be fair, they were probably running the show, so it was. I suppose it was the type of game, if I'm being honest with you, what I expected. I thought Rovers would keep it very tight, and their intensity in the first half, pressure was high up, you know what I mean, playing it long and pushing us back, certainly causes problems. But you know, I suppose you look over the game, other than Darren's one, but certainly Bucks' has headed ahead the crossbar, it's really, and there's no other chance in the match. So you know, that was probably disappointing. It's the first league game since I've been here that we haven't scored at home, which is unusual. You know, their mantra this year is just not concede, and they've only conceded 2 goals in 7 away matches, so I think that's fairly obvious. And you know, there's no doubt about that, and it was never going to be a game that they were going to come out and play open, and we knew that. And you know, and I suppose the proof of the pudding is that there was no chance, that there was no chance in the match, you know, so we knew that. But we just had done a lot of work in areas we thought we might be able to exploit, but for one reason or another it just didn't happen tonight. But still at the same time, I suppose, look at Darren and that header, but Bucks has won whatever 10-15 minutes to go. But it was just, it was I suppose it was a frantic high intensity game, probably lacking, you know, real quality, and which is unusual. But it was similar, I suppose, to probably our league performance, our league game above their way there as well. And you know, I saw our Pats and Rovers play a couple of weeks ago, and it was very similar as well. So you know, these things happen. You know, you look back and it's still 14 games in the season. But would they be more happy going home with a point? I say they would. Yeah, Dundalk have pushed on, and it's up to us and Rovers, and to see can we hang in with them. But at the moment it doesn't look that way, you know. I suppose maybe people thought that maybe Pats would do them tonight. I didn't think so, you know. I just feel that it's up to ourselves and Rovers to see can we challenge them. But it's difficult because you know, Dundalk has started the league on fire, and it's been hard. So I still think there's a long way to go, but and I think Europe might have a big play in the whole scenario yet, but at the same time it's you know, it's up to us to try and get points and keep the pressure on. And you know, Rovers ourselves canceling each other out isn't good enough at the end of the day. But look at I suppose the plus is it was another clean sheet for us, and we are disappointed because we had an intention, we thought we could win tonight.
Cancel each other out would probably be the best way to describe last night's game. I thought it was a poor game of football, but you differ in your opinion.
Only because I think I expected it to be so bad. I was at the press conference the other day when John was talking about what he expected them very tight at the back, and like, I just think I had expected that. I knew going down, I was like, scored a straw written all over it. I said it on air yesterday when I spoke to Colin about the match. So with that in mind, I think I was just not expecting goals, so wasn't kind of expecting the forward play to be, you know, the most entertaining part. But still, throughout the field, the passing was poor and everything, but I suppose it did have that intensity that made it a little bit more entertaining.
Perhaps, yeah, but I mean, like, Cork City had 5 players in midfield who were just tripping over themselves.
Yeah, they weren't in the game at all.
There was no space for them. There was nobody moving ahead of them. Liam Miller was getting on the ball, looking up. All he had ahead of him was Marcus Sullivan, who was surrounded by 3 centre-halves.
Mm-hmm.
And then he looked out in the wings. There was no one there because Billy Dennehy's tucked in right next to him, and it's the same on the right-hand side with Carl Shepherd. It was just really, really narrow. It was really, really defensive-minded. It was just poor to watch. I felt sorry for Marcus Sullivan, just getting no change whatsoever.
No.
The ball was lumped up to him countless times, and he'd win a header and he'd head the ball back, and then closest City player would be 30 yards behind him, inside their own half. It was tough to watch, I have to say. I mean, like, it improved slightly when Rob Lee Hine came on, and when Ross Gaynor came on, they got a bit more direct and went a bit more attacking. But it was poor. I don't think Cork City had a shot on target from play in the entire game. I'm open to correction on
Darren's
that now.
Darren's chance, yeah, exactly. Darren's chance in the first half and Gary Buckley's, yeah, they were both from set piece, weren't they?
Yeah,
so.
And the Gary Buckley's header, like, if that goes in instead of hitting off the top of the crossbar, would have been a screamer. Would have been, we'd been talking about the game.
Could have, would have, should have. In a lot more
positive terms. So I just thought it was very, very poor from Cork City. I expected a bit more from them, especially at home, but they kind of set it out like they were the away team and just trying to nick a point, and it didn't
there
like
was
that.
A couple of individual performances as well that I was very disappointed about, just because their form had been so good and they were really exciting to watch, and then last night just weren't in the game, so just disappointing.
Yeah, it certainly was disappointing. So a lot for John Caulfield to work on in the training ground, but that 4-5-1 formation at home, certainly not working in my point of view anyway. Alright, Caulfield also asked about the prospect of bringing back former City player Graham Cummins, who was released by Exeter City last week after a lengthy pause. But what, 4 seconds was it?
Yeah, I counted it about 5, which is a long time in a crowded room.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
We have to understand in Cork that this club has gone through turmoil over 30 years. That's grand for everyone to go and say, oh, get this fella, get that fella. The ethos of the force, the board, is that there's a budget there and that's it. We're the fifth biggest budget. I'm probably 80% less than what Shamrock Rovers are. Certainly I know I'm 80% less than Dundalk and Pats. Okay, so that tells you where it's at. And that's the reason, because the club and the force, the board have said that never again are we going to get into that situation. And that's where, and that's it. And like at the end of the day, you look at the history in the league, you've Bows and Shells were absolutely knackered. You know, they won leagues that they were millions in debt. You know what I mean? And rightly or wrongly, should they have been allowed to buy up everyone, even though everyone knew it was wrong. You look at ourselves, we won a league in 2005. We were the highest spenders that year with Shelburne. Never in the history of the club did that ever happen before. But people just went overboard, and even at the time watching the matches, we were going, this can't last. We knew, we heard what stories going on. So, we've done incredible. Like, let's be honest with you, lads, this goes in debt 12 months ago, 18 months ago. The debt is cleared. Brian Lennon went to England, and there's a lot of activity going on of grounds that we're trying to get. You know, we qualified for Europe for some 7 years. We're right in there. You know what I mean? Sometimes you have to look, and we all want to win. We all want to win trophies, but being realistic, the club has to be competing, has to minimum requirement qualify for Europe. Okay, so you know, Graham is on a lot of money. So to answer your question, I don't see we're in a strict ship here. So why we all want to say we want this fella and that fella. You know, we can't be silly and stupid and put the club in danger, and the force board won't do that. You know, so unless maybe someone comes in for some of my players and juggles something around, but I don't know, does Graham even want to be back in home? I think he wants to stay over from what I gather, so but at the same time, we're always watching things out there, we're always trying things, but at the same time, you know, it's you know, I keep saying, if we were guaranteed crowds of 5,000 and 6,000 every week, then you can have a bigger budget. But as we know in the history of Cork, that's not the way it works. You know, people come and you drop and lose a few games, you're back to the 3,000, you're back to 2,500, you're back up to 5. That's the way it works. So that's why we have to work off a lower budget. And then obviously, as we all know, your travelling costs are colossal. So maybe the fans will likely hear that we're going to sign them tomorrow morning or the 1st of July. But it's not as simple as that. And we have to just think about where we've come from, where we're at. And you know what I mean, the board has ended up in the club in jeopardy anymore, and rightly so.
Yeah, it's John Coffey there preaching financial prudence when asked about the prospect of bringing back Graham Cummins, who was released by Exeter City last week. The budget just not there by the sounds of what John was saying, and he doesn't sound too upset about it either. He understands the need for Cork to be financially prudent.
Well, he's made this point a couple of times. It just seems to be that he wants to hit it home to supporters that, look, you might want me to bring in such and such, but please be realistic about it. And that the only way that they can increase their budget is support. And in fairness, Cork City is the best support in the country. So he's not hammering that point in a negative way. He's just saying we have to be realistic about it.
Yeah, spot on there, I think. Right, still to come on the show, we're going to look ahead to the Munster Senior Football Championship. We're going to talk to our Cork football selector, Don Davis. We're also going to talk to Tomás Mulcahy and Larry Tompkins as they remember 1990. And we'll look ahead to tonight's Senior Hurling Club Championship action.
The Big Red Bench.
Getting you closer to rugby with Irish Independent Park. Epic stories start here.
Red FM.
Hi, Rory and Lisa here with you on the Big Red Bench this evening. Just to get you up to date on a couple of scores. Half time in the Senior Hurling Championship. Down in Park, you're in the Bars leading Douglas by 7-6 is the latest score from there. We'll be discussing more about the Senior Hurling Championship a little bit later on. In the League 2 playoff, Southend United and Wickham are scoreless at half time at Wembley. And in cricket, Cork County in action today against YMCA down the Mardyk. County are chasing 182 to win, and they're currently going very, very well indeed. They are on 142 for 3 after 31 over Stefan Grobler. Did that 52, very nice knock from him. And Mornay Bauer out for 40 earlier on. So Cork County going very, very well there indeed. We'll be discussing that on tomorrow's show. Now, the Munster Senior Football Championship getting underway tonight. Cork will have a close eye on the opener. Clare host Limerick, with the winners meeting the Rebels in the semi-final in 2 weeks' time. Cork football selector Don Davis has spoken to Mark Dynan ahead of the championship.
You've got to be honest, you know, you've got to look at where the positives were during the league and what maybe hasn't worked for the group. And we have already sat down, we've gone through with the players and the management, and I think it's nothing but positives going forward. Do you know, these are inter-county footballers, you know, you've got to dust yourself down and get back up and drive on. And like I said, no, the league is done, that chapter is now closed, and we're on to the new chapter, which is the Munster Championship.
And one of the big positives from the league campaign was your goal scoring ability. Is that something you look to continue into the championship?
Look, I suppose the league is about developing players in different positions and developing different systems, or trying and giving the opportunity to try different systems. So I suppose the goals were fantastic, but I mean, they only came about, I suppose, as a result of trying different players and different systems. So to us, there was a huge amount of positives throughout that league.
And Alan O'Connor, of course, returning to the panel, a big boost to you.
Huge boost. And you talk about positives, you know, I suppose you take that league final, we had 7 players that weren't available to us through injuries or sickness or whatever else, and out of those players, like Tom Clancy was sick, unavailable to play that day. Brian Driscoll had a hamstring. They're all available. Midfield, it's great to see Rory Dean back in the middle of the park. Great game in the challenge match against Dublin, and delighted for him. Alan O'Connor's huge boost to the panel. Forwards, Dunnock is ready to come back, Paddy Kelly's ready to come back. So look, they're all great players. That's all huge positives for Cork going forward, you know.
And when did you approach Alan about the possibility of coming back to the panel?
I suppose, look, we've been in touch with Alan a little bit all the time, and Owen Sexton would have been on to him the weeks prior to the league final, so we had known that Alan was coming back, and we were delighted when he had the decision made that he could come back, which was brilliant boost.
Injuries in the panel, John O'Rourke, of course, dislocated his shoulder. What would be the time frame for his return?
I gave all the positives with the other players there. Now the worry is John O, I suppose, put out the shoulder, and you're talking 6 weeks, and I mean, look, every county would love to have John O back, so you don't want to rush him back either and something goes wrong with the shoulder again. But he's on the road to recovery, and look, the sooner we get him back, the better it is going to be for us, you know.
And any other long term worries?
Again, another positive, I suppose, is Ian McGuire is back training, you know. We were very unsure whether we would have Ian at any stage throughout this campaign, but, you know, he's back training and back running, so fingers crossed he's another man that might see football sooner rather than later.
And he's another option in midfield as well.
Another option against midfield, you know. So that's they're a good footballer. So, like, the sooner we get all those back available, it's going to make competition for places that bit better, you know, and it's going to make Cork a better football team.
And look at the championship, Don, from the league this year, watching on the sidelines, what teams impressed you?
Well, I suppose, look, you have to be very honest about it and look at Dublin. You know, they appear to be the team that you need to set the bar, and that's the standard that Cork need to get to, you know. So they're the team at the moment that are out there to beat, I think, you know. Look, the All-Ireland Championship is just starting, you know. there's no All-Ireland one in March and April, you know. So at first, I'm concerned that's wide open for anyone to go and win. And certainly we will be doing everything in our power to achieve that.
And how exciting is this time of the year, the possibilities of the year ahead?
It's fantastic. I mean, this is where you want to be, you know. I mean, we've worked extremely hard since November. This group of players have really worked hard. They've done everything that's asked them. They're the most professional outfit that I've ever come across. And it's nice for them now to be in a situation that the season is starting for them.
Semi-final will be against either Clare or Limerick. What are you expecting from either of those sides, whoever comes through that one?
Look, this is where it starts. This is Championship football. We can't look anywhere only ahead of that game. Limerick and Clare, that's our All-Ireland final. That's where it begins. That's the game that we got to concentrate on. Whichever one of them comes through, we have them at home in Cork, and that is our All-Ireland final, and we have to take it one game at a time from there.
And I suppose when you look at the league, it exceeded expectations in a way. And has it given you a platform, do you think, overall for the Championship this year?
I think it has. I think it is, like I said, and I started by saying it's brought great positives to the group. You know, I suppose, you know, every media source basically had written us off, and that sometimes solidifies a group, you know. And they came out and performed, and look, we were top of the group, and they played some great football, you know.
From the Championship this year, the Football Championship, what are you expecting from the Championship overall? Do you think there'll be some good football played, or will we see a very defensive style Championship?
I hope that we see a very good Football Championship. I think you know, the game of football deserves that. But I mean, you know, having seen and played against the various different combinations of teams throughout the league, they're going to set up in different ways. Managers are going to set up in different ways. Some games are going to be good, and some games are going to be just defensive minded, but you've got to play what's in front of you on the day. You can't go in with one game plan and hope that you're going to win a match with all out attacking football. You've got to adapt to how it's coming and who you're playing and what manager's in charge of that particular team on any given day.
That's Cork football selector Don Davis there speaking to Mark Dynan ahead of the Championship. Of course, Clare and Limerick taking place a little bit later on this evening. All right, we are going to look back on 1990 now, because the All-Ireland winning Cork teams of that year were honoured with a civic reception at City Hall this week. The hurlers led by Tomás Mulcahy, the footballers led by Larry Tompkins. The double success was a first, and the Rebels claimed their remarkable feat 25 years ago. Lisa enjoyed a good chat with Tomás and Larry at the function as they reminisced together.
Yeah, sure, it's fantastic. Like, it's, I suppose we live on our memories now, and it's been a nice evening night to meet all the lads, both the hurlers and the footballers. It's great, and you know, we don't get the opportunities that many times. Everybody has their own lives, and you know, we meet each other from time to time, but to get a good crew together is fantastic.
And Tomás, do you mingle here now tonight and talk about the good old days, or?
Yeah, we have a bit of crack, I suppose. I mean, the life and soul of our party is Kevin Hinsey, right? So he's there tonight, he's in great form, you know, even though he's in crutches. He was slagging us all, right? You know, that he had a disc removal of his back and stuff, and I said, no wonder I did. He said, I was carrying us all and he's back over the years, right? So that's Kevin, you know. So, yeah, it's good, you know. So, I mean, like Larry mentioned, probably we don't realise ourselves the importance of what 1990 was about, what it meant for people, you know. You're playing the game, you win, and kind of, you know, and you take it in your stride and you move on. But I think over when you look back in it, and you kind of see all four of us, and it just certainly meant an awful lot to the people of Cork, you know. And there was an awful lot of pride within the county over the couple of week period here, right? And like, I suppose when yourself and Larry met on the Monday night back in Patrick Street, like with the two cups, you know, and we put the two cups to the crowd, it was just a special moment, you know, and one that you'll always remember. There's no doubt about that, yeah.
Bring us back to it for you, Larry, 1990. What's the standout moment for you, maybe, or?
Final whistle blown. I think that was just the realisation, like, that just happened, you know. You know, when you're playing, particularly against Meath, like, you know, you don't just, you have to wait for the final whistle. Like, they were a great team, and you know, as I said there earlier, like, you know, when you beat someone that you know that's really good, it's really worth it. And and we needed no motivation going into that final, I remember, and we just wanted Meath, because we had been beaten by them on a couple of occasions in 87 and 88. Was a cruel defeat after replay. So, you know, I was glad that we ended up with Meath in the final, and just when the final whistle was blown, it was just a relief, and it was just fantastic then. That the homecoming was brilliant, and the Cork people, as Tomás said there, they came out, I don't know, there was mentions that there could have been up to 100,000 people in Cork that night. You know, we probably just didn't realise it at the time, like the significance of the wins, like, and you know, but listen, it's so hard to do, isn't it, to win a double, and you know, there were special moments.
And Tomás, for your final, I mean, you were down at half time and you ended up beating Galway. Talk us through that day, and for you, the memories.
Yeah, I mean, look, I suppose going into it, we were underdogs all year, you know. I mean, be silly. I can remember back to 1990, this time of the year, May wasn't too good for us, right? We had played in the league semi-final above in Nolan Park on a bank holiday Monday. We got 1 point from play. We were absolutely hammered in the game and things were looking fairly doom and gloom, but we got slaughtered back in Cork by the press and the media and stuff like that. We didn't have a chance going into a Munster Championship campaign. And like, but we had a team around us with the Cannon and with Gerald McCarthy, and they were special people, and they had a serious belief in Cork hurling and they had a serious drive and a passion to win, you know. So we got back on the horse again and we trained for the Munster Championship campaign, and we had a fantastic win in Munster, you know. Nobody gave us a chance against Tipperary. They were coming back after being Ireland champions in 89. No one gives a chance, and one of those days in Turles, right, I mean, being in the dressing room before the match, you knew this team wasn't going to lose, right, you know. I mean, they went out through the two walls, right in the dressing room, or the four walls, whatever it was, right, just to get out onto the field to take on Tipperary, and it kind of went on from there. Great confidence in the team, you know, going in against Galway. They had beaten Kilkenny in the Ireland semi-final. Anytime you beat Kilkenny in the semi-final, you're going to be half favourites going to the final, and they were, you know. So half-time, I mean, fond memories of halftime in the dressing room. Like, we always have a great crack, you know. There was a good few of us, and we weren't performing. We had a bad day. And, no uncertain terms, the Cannon, like, had a few of us out in the shower area, jerseys off, and buckets of ice water, and he thrown it up on top of us, and he said, "Jesus, lads, would you ever wake up, you know?" And and I can remember, I mean, and he was somewhat of it. He was down on his one knee, and he had a Cork jersey out in the hand, and there was tears coming from his eyes at halftime, you know. It meant so much to him more than anything else. He was the coach that was after bringing the team to an All-Ireland final. He didn't want to be let down either, right, you know. He had a lot of pride in himself and how he went about things, and then with Gerald McCarthy, and I think that it was inspirational, you know, because the second half was such a turnaround. I mean, we drove into Galway, we dominated, and by some fantastic goals, right, you know, and the crack afterwards was just incredible, you know. John Fitzgibbon came up with the one, like, who's the person to put the onion in the Cannon's bag at halftime that made him cry, you know, and but a crack. But a personal moment for me was my own late father. He passed away with a heart attack many years ago, but the weekend of the match, he was told by his own GP, he was struggling with heart disease, and he was told by his own GP and his consultant not to go to the match, you know, that he should stay at home, it would be too exciting for him, and he wouldn't last the pace there, you know. But he didn't take any heed to that, went to the match, and all I can remember was thinking after I got presented with the cup, geez, I hope he's alright. Down onto the field, got back to the dressing room, kind of, we're in the dressing room on our own, kind of having a quiet moment after all the press are gone, and burst open the door, and he walks and throws his arms around me and stuff like that. He was a proud man, you know. So big memory for me, being honest with you, big memory.
Well, that's what I'm getting from this evening, the pride in the county in that year. But for you, Larry, as well, it wasn't just about the team of players. For you, it was the quality in your panel overall as well.
So listen, you know, we had, I suppose, from 1989 when we won the All-Ireland in Mayo, it's amazing, there was no back door at that time. We were missing six players going into the Munster final the following year, but through injury, and Denny Allen had retired, and we beat Kerry by 18 points in the Munster final. So that would tell you, like, that, you know, the quality of players we had at subs, like, you know, the Lord of Mercy, Mick McCarthy, John Cleary, Paddy Hayes, Danny Cullity, you know, Mick Slocum made the team late, you know, Barry Coffey was on and off. Like, we had serious players, like John O'Driscoll. Like, you know, the quality was just immense, like, and, you know, I said it earlier, like Meath and Cork were exceptional sides, and, you know, if one of those teams, it was a pity Meath arrived at that time, because if they didn't, I think that Cork would have won, ending up to 5-6 All-Irelands, you know.
25 years on now, when we look at 2015 and the Munster Championship starting this weekend now, how are you feeling about Cork and their chances overall for this year now?
Maybe it's a good omen. Two hammerings in the football in Ireland this year in National Leagues, you know. So yeah, they're backed into a corner like they were back in 1990. So yeah, Hopefully they can all come out and fight in it. Look, 2015 was all about character, right? You know, I mean, these guys have shown already the best. They are a very good team, hurling wise, right? I mean, they've got to a National League final. Some very good performances this year. But look, they underperformed the last day against Waterford. They have a couple of injuries coming into the championship at this stage. But look, that's why you have a panel of players now, 30 odd, you know. So you've got to trust every one of them, and there's an opportunity for somebody. If somebody loses up because of injury, somebody else must come in and take your place, and you must build from there. And I think the Cork public are expecting a reaction. I'm expecting a reaction. reaction. I'm sure Jimmy Barry Murphy and his backroom team are expecting a reaction, and hopefully the players are in that frame of mind that we are going to get a reaction, you know. And people kind of may read in too much, you know, Patrick O'Mahony being injured, and he's a big loss, he's a huge loss to Waterford, and we'd all wish him well in his recovery. And sometimes you can be fooled by that, you know, because Waterford have a serious talented squad as well, right? And they've strength and depth as well, so there's an opportunity there for somebody else down there to come and play as well. So it's going to be a big match, huge occasion. And Doug, I mean, I think we mentioned this before, Lisa, right? You know, the Munster Championship, we had said before, kind of the All-Ireland series in August, the Championship really doesn't begin until then, but it's different now, you know. You can't afford to lose against Waterford. You're in a backdoor system. You have Clare playing Limerick in a backdoor, one of them is going to a backdoor system, one comes on and plays Tipperary, one of those is going to be a backdoor system. You've Galway and KKR or Dublin the other side, one of those, right? So it's fraught with danger, saying that it's the easier route to go down the backdoor route. So it has to be get to Munster final at this stage and take on whoever you get there, you know. So fingers crossed, I think Cork can do it, yes.
Absolutely. And Larry, as regards the footballers, we take many of the same points, I think, when it comes to the footballers after their league.
Yeah, so listen, they had a wonderful run in the league until the final, but you know, Tomás mentioned it there and he said, right, like, sure, like, listen, the biggest thing you want in a championship is motivation, and sure, nobody has to be knocking the walls down. Like, everybody has criticised them and put them down now, that they're no good and different things. So listen, you know, they've got to stand up now and be counted, and we just see what they're made of. And please God, if they can roll on to a Munster final against Kerry, but then, you know, that's when, you know, they have to do it. And you know, it's amazing, like, 1995 is the last time that Cork beat Kerry down in Killarney. Like, Jesus, I was playing that day, so things are bad, things are bad. Like, even Tomás was a handy footballer in his day, so.
I played in 85
before I got badly injured with my knee, I was going training with Sarge for hurling. So who knows, both of us could have been behind lucky not to do the double.
There was no place on the field for 7 Cahillan in hurling, I can guarantee you that. Stick to the football.
So it could be more than Teddy McCarthy winning the double. So listen, you know, it's they have all the motivation about the hurling football team. So listen, we wish them the best, and hopefully they can do the business.
Cork for the double, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
That's Tomás and Larry. They're really, really good stuff from the 1990 All Ireland winning captains, honoured at a civic reception in City Hall this weekend to commemorate 25 years since that historic double. Really, really good stuff from them. Right, the Senior Hurling Club Championship is continuing this evening, and the latest score from down in Páirc Uaireann, where Douglas and the Bars are going head to head at half time. It's the Bars who lead by 7-6. It's followed by Glen Rovers and Ballymartle at 7:45. Glen Rovers boss Richie Kelleher has previewed the game with us and looks ahead to 2015 in general.
The challenge is the first, obviously, to get over Ballymartle in the first one. That will not be easy because they're a seasons team, and our form after a good year, which I consider was a good year, if I counted the final for 60 minutes was a disaster, but like, our season was 9 or 10 months long, so that was, in my eyes, it was a good season, a very good season. So the challenge is that after a good season, our form the following season is very poor. So we got to make sure that that doesn't happen, and that we can build on last year, which I think we will, but we got to go and do it all again.
What do you expect off Ballymartle in the first round?
A tough physical game. They're a good seasoned team. We beat them last year, but to be honest, I thought we did have too much for us. But we performed on the day, and the day we perform is just how you can ask for. So if we perform, I'll be happy with that. You'll be kind of focused on your own. Ballymart will know us, and we'll know them. It's just once my lads perform, that's all you can ask for.
Is there a pressure on Glen Rovers this year, considering how last year ended and the long wait you've had now for a title?
If we had a couple of county titles in the bag, I'd say yes. But we're just like everybody else. We've won nothing for 25, 26 years. So, like, we're a big club, but our record for the last 26 years is very, very poor. So, in my eyes, we're just a normal club. We got to go and do it. There's no guarantees.
But I imagine with how far you've gotten recent years without a success, that a successful championship will only be judged on winning the title.
Yeah. Well. Look, a big club, we all want county titles, but like, they're not given out. The best team will win the county every year. Sars was the best team last year. We lost in 2010 to Sars again. Sars, every year, the best team wins it. And if you don't win it, that's because people say things went wrong on the day, things went whatever, you're just not the best team. The best team will win the county.
All right, looking outside of yourselves, who would you consider the big challengers in 2015?
Well, look, you'd have to say Sarah. Sarah's the best team in Cork. Middleton seem to be making good strides this year. They have a new mismanagement in place and they seem to be going places. And obviously they have a county in their bag, so that's a great thing to have. I think Douglas, we beat Douglas last year, but Douglas are a good team and they've wanted two young fellas coming through again in the forward division, which they'll be strong again, Douglas. And I know they were very disappointed losing to us last year. But look, that sport, it was a challenge. We won on the day. But if we met again this year, they could easily just beat us.
Yeah, it's Glen Rovers boss Richie Kelleher. They're looking ahead to 2015 in general. They play Ballymartle tonight at 7:15 down in Park Erin. That's following Douglas and the Bears. Reaction to come on both games on the bench tomorrow from 6 p.m. We're going to hear from Ballymartle's Brian Corrie.
It's a bit mixed now. Like we've 5 games played, 1-2, lost 2, and drew 1. So it's kind of a bit mixed bag. But at the end of the day, like, you know, come championship, the league form really doesn't make any difference. You know, just been right for that day, so like, and we're just looking forward now to that and stepping up preparations for that.
Brian, how much has the Ballymartle squad and our management team, the whole lot, changed since last year?
There hasn't been too much change. No, the one or two players, but it's more or less the same squad. We've been lucky enough; we haven't lost much players to immigration or anything, so it's kind of similar off squad, and we had no retirement, so thank God we've that leg.
Okay. And first round of the championship against Glen Rovers. How did you feel about that draw when you heard it?
The Glen actually were the team that knocked us out last year, so it was probably a good draw in a way to get back to first round. But we know, like, they're a very, very good, very good team. They've been to a few county finals there the last couple of years, so we know we'll have to perform very, very well to kind of get a result against them. But looking forward to it anyway.
It's probably the easiest match to get primed for when you consider the end of your 2014 against them.
Probably is. All right, you know, like, obviously if your local rivals or teams that knocked you out the previous year or early the games, you want to get again the following year. But look, it is just another game. At the end of the day, we play all the teams every year anyway in league and stuff, so just, you know, as I said, we're just looking forward and can't wait to get into it.
And what would represent a successful championship for Ballymartle, do you think?
It's hard to know, you know. I suppose you just have to take every game at a time, you know. There's nothing really between any teams up senior, so just trying to win every game, just see where it takes, you know, see how we get on.
That's Ballymartle's Brian Corrie. They play tonight as they play Glen Rovers, 7:45, the start time for that game. Latest score from St Finbar's and Douglas after 40 minutes. It's the Bears who lead by 8-6. Reaction on both those games coming up on tomorrow evening's show. Finally, getting underway in just a few minutes is Carrick Tool and Aaron Zone. We're going to hear from Tony O'Flynn from Carrick Tool.
Yeah, we're up and down in the league. We've 6 played, 3 wins, 3 losses. I think at the moment we're 4th or 5th in the league. It's kind of funny this year in that everybody is taking points off everybody else, you know, and it's just up and down. There's no real standout team. Everybody's kind of equal enough, you know.
So opening round against Aaron's Own, how did you respond to that draw?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, every round is tough, but Aaron's Own are only 3 miles up the road from us, you know, and Lance have played against each other and been in college and schools against each other, so they know each other well, and it's going to be tough. We'll just turn up and we'll see how we get on, you know.
I know you'll all say first round is the only thing you look at, but for Carrick Toohill, what would represent a good championship or a successful one?
Well, I suppose you'd have to try improve on your last championship. Last year we were beaten in the 4th round by y'all, so we hope to improve on that this year. But as you said yourself, the first round is the be all and end all. I mean, if you win the first round, you're safe, you know, and you have to talk about that. I mean, if you go into the quagmire of, you know, the backdoor system, anything can happen and you don't know when you're going to be playing, you know. So we have a new man, Nico Manny from Waterford. He's great track record. He's from the Ballygunner club and we're delighted to have him, and he's going very, very well at the moment.
And what has Mick brought to set up? What's different under Mick?
That's change, and there's an old saying, a change is as good as a rest. So this is where we're at and we'll see how we get on.
What would you expect of Aaron's Own first round?
Everybody knows what you get off Aaron's Own. They're all big, tough, strong team, plenty very, very good hurlers, and you know, we have to be at our best to give them a good go, and we'll certainly be there.
That's Tony O'Flynn from Carrigtool. They play Aaron's Own in just a few moments' time in Liscoll. That's pretty much it from us. Just to get you up to date on the cricket, Cora County 160 for 5, chasing 182 to beat YMCA down at the Mardyke, 38 overs gone. So County needing 22 more runs at 2 runs per over to win the match there, so fingers crossed they can hold on and get the win. And finally, just to some breaking news, it is now official. Ireland has become the first country in the world to introduce same-sex marriage by a vote of the people. 1,201,607 people in Ireland voted yes, so it's a majority of 467,307. So history made in Ireland today. No doubt Stevie G on the block party for the next 3 hours is going to get the party going in full swing there. Right, that's it from us. We're back tomorrow from 6 p.m. Enjoy your evening, folks. Stevie's up next.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's new Red FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready?
In Cork, we make the best crowds.
Let me see your hands.
And that's why they all want to play here. From Beck to the Vamps, Ellie Goulding, The Frames, Noel Gallagher. They all want to play live at the Marquee. And we've got tickets to every single gig. This weekend, stay listening to win your tickets to see Beck live at the Marquee. Cork's Red FM, your live at the Marquee station.